The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Sophie Thien, the head of HR and talent at 11FS. It's great to have you on the show, and like I say, I've been really looking forward to this one in particular. It's actually rare that I get people who are kind of running HR and talent. You know, we have a lot of technical people on the show, but interestingly enough, like regardless of how technical people are, like what level of leadership, it always comes back to, you know, the staff, the people, the HR, the cultural aspect. Uh-huh. And I find that particularly fascinating about technology, because I think people are very assumptive that it's such a harsh disconnect with people in technology. But, you know, it's the complete opposite. And, you know, the importance of things like HR and culture, I, in my opinion, I don't think they've ever been more significant.
I think so. I absolutely agree with you. I think it has always been really important. Just back to your point, HR wasn't something that is a profession that was created 5 years ago. It's obviously existed for as long as we have been alive. But I also think it's because of how the industry wants to change or wants to continually improve themselves now because of the competition in the market. So therefore, they've got no choice but to properly or transparently address the kind of issues that are within people and culture. And you ever so often now even hear, you know, the business minds, which are your business leaders, your CEOs, your CFOs, all talk about how culture is probably the utmost important thing right now to make sure your business is as successful as you want it to be.
Yeah, well, it's so true. And I think a lot of the thing is, for me, where a lot of these, I think where, it's obviously something that people have always taken seriously, but it seems as though, you know, the kind of the buzz around the importance of HR and culture seems to have been intensified, from my perspective at least, in recent years. And my opinion on it is that it's really stemmed from the comfort level that people have for moving and chopping and changing around jobs every year or so now, especially with tech. And that's completely acceptable now. You know, it's almost becoming the norm, and it's almost frowned upon if you've been at a business for too long now. That's where it seems like that's kind of the direction, which is all good and well for workers and for candidates, but for business owners and executives who have to focus on that, retention is, you know, at the top of everyone's priority, and it's so difficult to achieve that. And hence, my belief is why it's now, you know, been so intensified on, you know, the importance of retention and building a culture is pretty much directly aligned with that retention piece.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. But back to your point about how it's been intensified, the fact that we're talking more about culture, that also means that when you're looking at a retention plan for each and every company, which is obviously part of HR's responsibility, you're also talking about a life cycle. Ever so often you talk about a life cycle of a person's career in that particular company to go from maybe between 2 to 3 years time and probably no more than 5 years. And I think that's absolutely okay, because you're talking about making sure that people come in to be as productive as they can to achieve their own goals, their personal goals, at the same time help the company grow and then achieve their business goals as well. So I think it's all fair and well in today's industry expectations. You're right, just looking at recruitment, people are now being not so much of being penalized, but, you know, in a way it doesn't look good for them if they've, say, for instance, been in the bank for the last 15 years. It's really sad to say that we've now completely shifted the expectation for the new workforce. But then, was it necessary? I kind of feel like it is, because you're talking about, you know, ever so often you talk about how companies want to push themselves in the technology space to reinnovate and go towards that innovation direction. But at the same time, why aren't you innovating your people, your skills? And the only way to do that is to make sure that you're refreshing your skills and by saying that, it doesn't mean you're refreshing your people, which in a way you're not retaining your talent because they've been outdated. It's more of pushing each and every individual out of their own comfort zone to ensure that the job that they've signed up for from day one is probably only going to last them the next 3 years in maximum capacity and maximum productivity, because then they should be in a position well enough to reinvent their own career or responsibility to do better things and more things.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a requirement now. You have to be that way inclined.
Well, there are still some companies out there that are, you know, they're more emphasizing on the whole retention plan means we want our people to be happy, you know, the happiness level. That's how they determine whether or not your people are going to stay for the next 5 to 10 years, but not really, you know, changing their responsibilities. Or are you promoting people? There's still plenty of companies out there that are still promoting people based on their tenure, not so much of their responsibility, or for instance, you know, making hiring mistakes where you're hiring people just because the workload was expanded. So then technically you're replacing, or you're filling a gap with just another person, not necessarily with a strategic direction.
Yeah, it's true. Do you think it's very much this way of thinking has come from maybe the tech startup culture? Where do you think that could kind of derive from?
I think personally it is the it wouldn't be just the tech. I think it's a startup culture, to be honest. I mean, I myself have been in engineering and tech for a while now, and I've come from a corporate background and then also in a startup in the most recent years. I feel like in the startup it is a lot less forgiving if you are not as capable to perform your job, which you're hired to do. And because of that, the conversations become easier to have. And it's a lot more honest conversations between, you know, the manager and the employee, whether or not they're hitting the performance targets. Whereas, you know, when you're in a corporation and there are like 3,000 people and one manager, although managers are expected to be the most effective manager, but technically research has shown that you should not have direct reports of more than 8 people to make you the most effective manager. But in a large organization, you probably have 200 people that you're looking after.
Yeah, so inefficient. To that point as well, I heard when I was over in California working, and this is kind of a bullish approach, I suppose, and on the extreme level, but what I heard it from actually several mentors or, you know, investors, and they were saying that when you get to a certain point of growth, so, you know, maybe you hit like whatever the number might be, for a layman example, say 40, 50 people, the first thing you should look at doing is getting rid of those people who were there from at the very beginning. And it was it's a really bullish thing to do. And
it is.
You know, and I think that what the point that they were obviously trying to make was that, alluding to your point, is that they're not, you don't want people to be looking at a longevity, and that's how we're celebrating success essentially. And what they were saying is that if those people begin to hang on to that as like that is their kind of moment of glory, is just actually physically being there for a long period of time or for the longest period of time, then that's kind of counterproductive to the culture. And obviously, like, that's, you know, very massive generalization and a very bullish way of doing things. But, yeah, you know, the point stands to what you were alluding to, is that we were making an exaggerated effort to eliminate any of that train of thought as that is what success looks like. Just because you've been here for a while, you might have been productive at the beginning, but just because you can't assume that job done just because you were productive at the very start. And that was kind of the extreme example, but alluding back to that point, I think it was made, but maybe we could make it in a bit more of a subtle way, I suppose.
I don't think it's, I think it's a, you're right, it's a very bullish way of looking at it, but I think it's, we're not understanding a concept of how or why we're actually doing that. So for instance, again, it's about, you're an individual and you've joined a company, for instance, a startup, you're talking about that particular space. So people come into a company, we always talk about how your culture will evolve based on the people that you bring in. So obviously, as a startup goes through different kind of phases, it goes from a startup to a scale up, and then it goes on to, you know, hyper growth and whatever they are going through. It doesn't matter like tenure, because there are some startups that has been around for maybe 4 or 5 years before they finally hit hyper growth, because that wasn't what they were focused on. Maybe it was a product problem, not so much of a problem, maybe that just wasn't their vision. And then you've got, you know, really new, brand new startups that have been probably just around for 2 years and then go through hyper growth in 18 months and then go into a unicorn in less than 3 years. So they're obviously going through different kind of phases, but tenure has no relevance in that particular context. What's important is, if you have to ask that honest question, whether or not the people that you have, which are your early employees, whether or not they can adapt to the fast pace, the hyper growth, or what you're trying to achieve as your next set of vision. So it's all really down to the employers and the employees to understand whether or not their expectations are aligned. Take traditional recruitment, for instance. When you reach out to a candidate, say even via LinkedIn, you reach out to a candidate, you tell them this is what the role is, you set the expectation, and then they'll ask you whether or not this has career growth or career plans. I'm looking forward to move into, you know, one step up. Often candidates say that. Then you need to set their expectations whether or not your company is going to be able to deliver these kind of goals for them. If not, you're setting someone up for failure from the very start. So you're getting your fundamentals wrong. And then it's the same as going into a startup. There are people I've met great people, very brilliant, intelligent people who are particularly just more interested in the first phase of a startup because they love setting something up from scratch, including myself. But then there are also individuals who love coming in and join that fast-paced environment, which is already on a running train. They love that. They don't like to set up things from scratch because there's a lot of pulling your hair out, stressing out on whether or not this is the best practice. Some people love to go into an environment where this is the best environment for them, because best practice has already been established. They are that kind of people. Then you've also got a bunch of other people who love just finding out problems or fixing things. I call them tinkerers, because they are the people that you want at a certain later stage in your company, because they would improve everything that you've set up into the next level. So they're different kind of individuals. Is the company actually having these kind of honest conversations to start with and setting that kind of expectation? So if you're asking me again whether or not it's a bullish environment, I think it's just facing the reality that you're not right for this phase, but it doesn't mean that you're not a good person. You've done some great work with the company, but it's also down to that individual whether or not you want to continue on in this fast pace. Maybe not. There are some people who decide that's not for me anymore. Or I've actually met people who said, once the company hits reaches 100 people, I'm out of here, but not because I don't enjoy time, but I want to go and start something else from scratch, because that motivates them. So it's really not a bullish method when you really look at it. It's just becoming a lot more honest when you're hiring and when you're setting people's expectation up and setting them up for success. Because what usually happens in a corporate environment is you get people who are too complacent, and then you get them demotivated, demoralized, and then they end up exiting anyway. But that would have taken you maybe 5 to 8 years to figure out whether or not it's the right time to let them go. But think about the cost and think about the risk. Think about having someone demotivated in a team of 10 people where everyone else had just joined the company. So that's not good for your onboarding. And that's also not good from a sort of like your employee happiness risk perspective.
Interesting. The first thing that kind of makes me think of is that the calculation of churn and working towards a churn as a basic principle and a basic number just got a lot more complicated, I suppose, based on that.
Yeah, but that's also a traditional way of looking at it, right? Because like I said, HR didn't exist 5 years ago, not just 5 years ago, it's been existing, you know, existed for a long time now. And what's important is all these HR metrics that we've been talking about, or even when I was taught to do that, when I was in a corporate environment, was that you measure everything because these metrics were proven to be the success factors of some of the largest corporations in the world. But that's also because they're in a completely different phase. If you apply the exact same method to a startup 10 years later, then maybe that would work and that would be effective for them. But you're applying something that only works for an after phase, or after phase four, I would say, into a startup that is in phase two. Of course, that's not going to work. Of course, that's broken. And of course, you don't understand how your employees are feeling, how to work out and making sure that your recruitment process is correct, your retention process is correct, and all the strategies that go into play and to make sure that your people are happy. So it's not a one size fits all anymore. And there's a reason why you call the companies that have just recently started up as a startup. You give them a name because they're in that phase. So that's my take on it. I mean, I'm in a startup right now. I don't use traditional methods to track whether or not my people are happy. We do different kind of things. We reinvent the wheel and how to measure key happiness. It's not so much of whether or not we're paying people well, we're giving them pension and healthcare and benefits like that. We go off with, do your visions align to ours? Do your goals align to ours? Are you in here for like what type of goals you have? Are you here to contribute? Are you wanting to make impactful decisions and also try and change the face of the earth, or financial services, we call it, for what 11FS does? So very different questions, which technically leads you to very different outcomes.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mean, it seems quite obvious, you know, as you've kind of seems to have, but I mean, I suppose that's because you've articulated it so well. But it is crazy that it is one of those areas where I think across the board, people do use those traditional metrics for everything. You know, I've been in marketing for a long time, and you know, there's a element of kind of best practices for things, but everything's bespoke. You know, there's no strategy that's going to absolutely work for two businesses, even if they're probably selling the same thing. It might not work exactly the same way, right? So, why have we not really considered that for a HR function? And my initial observation, from my perspective and being involved in several different businesses from medium to startup, etc. So, my take is that because everyone's so harsh on the numbers and the metrics and the quantifiable facts that they kind of lean towards someone who can just kind of put layman numbers in layman terms, and they're not willing to kind of listen to the bigger picture, or like you said, like someone who's looking to reinvent the wheel or bespoke the HR or the recruitment process for them internally. They just want the numbers on the table, and they want to kind of know that it works, but it clearly isn't going to work like that anymore.
But it's also what kind of numbers you're looking at. I'm not saying that we don't do metrics. Okay, so for instance, I'll give you an example. Like, I want to try and reinvent the wheel for HR and how we do things in a startup, although I've got the background doing it in a more traditional way of how I've studied it, how I've practiced it in a larger corporation, and I've realized that it doesn't work for a startup. But then also, does it mean that we don't have metrics in terms of data points? Of course we do. We've got data analysts, like some of the best people in a startup environment, as you can imagine, especially in a product company. And they can churn out the best data to tell you exactly what you want to know. But more importantly, it's the same question back to that point. Why are you doing this? Is there a purpose you're doing this? What are you trying to track, and what do you want to see? So if your leadership tells you that they want to see how happy we are, how are we tracking against productivity, it doesn't mean that the old method doesn't work. It's what kind of data you now use. It's all down to the point of what your leadership thinks they want to see as a success factor for HR function or for growth of the company and how they contribute to the growth of the business. It's all down to, if your leadership tells you to run in a traditional way, then you as a HR person, I think it's quite fair to say that, fair enough, I will run it the traditional way because I know how, I've been trained how, I've practiced how the same way. But if your leadership then, on the other hand, thinks that, yeah, we should do things very differently because what's important to me is my people rather than all these metrics that have been proven successful or failed by other companies, because we don't want to be different. We want to be the same, or we want to be the same successful. Then I think you've just answered your own question there.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Interesting. Do you think that the skill set that's, I suppose, was once desirable for someone in HR, do you think that that's shifting along with these, some of the ideas? Do you think when, say, you were looking to recruit someone now for to work, mm-hmm. to work with you, do you think that mm-hmm. that's changed at all over the kind of since you've been involved in this space? Do you think that now there's a different skill set that's required, or maybe not skill set, should I say, but someone who approaches challenges in a different way?
I'm probably the wrong person to ask this question, because I think I'm a bit biased in terms of my opinion about how HR should function and how HR should look like. And also, I think I might upset a lot of HR people who spent a lot of time studying and improving their skills in the particular space, only because I actually didn't come from HR myself. I used to be an engineer and then decided that I love working with people. I did my time in recruitment so that I understand a bit more about process, went into doing RPO. So the more I understand, you know, different multi-layers of our processes in a large corporation, until I figured out that going into a startup means I can properly try and reinvent what I think should be right for smaller companies. That's what I've been doing in the last couple of years. So if I was being very, very honest, I think there are a few elements that some of the traditional, if you look at a traditional or an old piece of HR job description, if you're looking for a coordinator, you want someone who's got a HR background, and they're coming in to look after benefits, rewards, and things like that. And then you'll look at, you know, or global mobility, that kind of function also come from HR. You're looking at sort of like talent. Normally you hire a lot of recruiting background people, but there's also sometimes I see job description asking for preferred CIPD, which I don't quite understand why. I mean, I'm not saying I don't do my part, but I'm also sort of feeling that there are some really important skills that HR should have. For instance, talent. When you're looking at talent, where is it really headhunting that works now, or headhunting works 10 years ago, not now? Is it building a talent community? We often hear, you know, startups talking about having meetups, building a talent community. They have their own pipeline because they use an ATS system that doesn't help them keep thousands and thousands of candidates in there, because, well, the company existed only the last 2 years. How can they have 5,000 candidates so far? Because of that, you probably want people with a lot more, say, you know, a lot more community experience, can organize meetups, can organize events, and actually properly bring that kind of value in, which is what I look for in my team as well. And when I look for a recruiter, I normally look for a recruiter who also understands the events part, also enjoys building up their own personal branding, because you're not just a company ambassador, you're also your own personal ambassador. And that's what connects you to the people emotionally, to draw them into your company, because you are also one of the people that represents the culture of the company. I cannot afford to have a recruiter that doesn't reflect or represent the culture that I'm trying to build in the company. So I think that's part and parcel of what kind of really important skills and elements that I think the new type of HR should have. I've also met brilliant, brilliant HR people who can analyze data because they used to, you know, do some, they have some data background, or they're data analysts. Well, because of that, they were able to pinpoint, is that a stress level you're looking at? Is it a feedback loop that's broken? People who can analyze. So that analyzing skill is absolutely very, very important, because if you don't know what's the root cause, how are you going to solve a problem? That feeds into your thought process as well. So, I mean, like I said, I can be quite biased because I didn't come from that kind of background, but I also sort of feel like my engineering experience had helped me a lot in trying to analyze and get down to root cause, because that's my thought process before I go all out and try and fix a problem that's probably not even a problem. It was probably just symptoms.
But it makes sense, though. I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying. I mean, you know, it's how can I try and make kind of an analogy here? I'm rubbish at these analogies, by the way. I don't know why I even try and make an effort. But, you know, if you've done the job before, you know, if you've done the job, you know what it's like. You know the subtleties. You know what kind of aspects and what people you're actually trying to, when, you know, when you meet, you can, you know, this is, I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, it really makes a lot of sense to me. You know what it takes yourself. Therefore, if you're building a culture around that, they need to identify with that. And that, you know, tied in with their kind of personal branding is what's going to allow the consistency throughout the culture. It makes, to me, it makes a lot of sense, you know. I think it is a different thing, isn't it, recruitment? Because people, you have to be able to identify with them. If you're a recruiter who, you know, has recruited for sales, and then all of a sudden you're going to go and work and, you know, in a technology company and you don't know anything about technology, you know, how can you, just because you were good at the sales aspect of it, doesn't mean that you're going to be good at technology. And, you know, maybe you're phenomenal at the sales because you are in kind of, if you work for an agency, you're kind of doing sales yourself anyway.
Yeah, I do agree that. I do agree that to a certain extent. I also feel that. So, for instance, agency recruiters are very, very good at recruiting. I would say sometimes even better than an internal recruiter. I think we can all agree to that, because there's a certain limit and there's a certain type of target. But then what an internal recruiter is really, really good at is actually understanding the bigger picture, which means they are solely responsible for the retention, and therefore the way they approach acquisition of a candidate is a very different approach as compared to a agency recruiter. And that's why you now see a lot of startups for recruiting that are more of a slash IPO, but then also client relationship sort of engagement model, where they will put their recruiter into your company for at least a day a week, is because understanding the culture makes the recruiter a lot more effective in attracting the right kind of candidate. So even recruiting itself needs to be changed. And the way I've seen it changing is obviously towards the right direction. It's improving, and I'm very, very happy about it. But it's only a small market that's actually doing that. Most of the majority of recruitment is still very, 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 very traditional. So just going back to that point as well, I think there's that limitation where recruiters are quite, because they have been told that the job is to hire someone and then put them into a role, make a placement, and then that's it. But keep in touch with your candidates, obviously, because you want to continue to keep that relationship going. But then as soon as the person goes into a company, it becomes that sole recruiter, that HR function's responsibility to look after that person, that new hire, until eternity. So they've got a lot of more sort of like pressure and targets and how to make people better and retain them better.
Yeah, I agree. There is an attitude shift, and I think we are seeing that. It's just, how do you approach it? How do you, I think, how do you build that skill set? And I think for me, again, it is part of the training. It's part of having someone who's probably from a slightly different background who will approach things differently, there is that shift towards it. And at the end of the day, if you're an agency or internally, the company either way is the one that's going to dictate the pace and is the one who's going to want to have either HR people that identify strongly with the culture, or if you're, you know, recruiter working for them, the same rules still apply, because you still have to understand what the culture is doing and be able to identify links between the people that you're bringing in. So it makes a lot of sense. I'm sure that maybe there are some people who probably disagree with that. But I mean, from my perspective, and clearly from what you're saying, it seems that we're on the same page. I'm conscious of time. I know we haven't got too much long left, but I wanted to finally ask as well, you know, about technology actually specifically, and the role that's playing in the HR and the recruitment process at the moment. Obviously, there's a lot of speculation around how kind of automated technologies are going to potentially influence the HR and the recruitment process, probably predominantly the recruitment process, I would suppose. Do you have kind of any thoughts on that? And if you do, do you see it as kind of a positive or a negative thing, that adopting these kind of automated technologies?
Well, I'm a pro. I definitely think there's a huge benefit in actually getting a lot more things automated. As companies grow, you're now starting to listen, or you're now starting to hear the word hypergrowth. That doesn't just tell you that they're growing fast, but they're also going faster beyond time. That means that a lot of things has to be automated to make sure that you are maximizing your efficiency. That the whole point of going through hypergrowth means you're doing it right, but in a much, much, much faster pace as traditionally any other companies would do or would go through. I think the benefit out of that is, for instance, I mean, I've been into startups so far, and I've seen that data has played a really big part in what we're doing and how we can do things better and improve the way even recruitment functions, or even retention, or just HR functions alone in a company. Without data, again, you don't know what's broken. And without someone analyzing the data, again, you don't know how some things are broken. There are a lot of things, or I would say I love what Richard Branson used to say. He said, you can teach skills, but you cannot teach experience. And that's why people coming into HR functions nowadays come from various different kind of backgrounds. It's because that's the kind of experience that money cannot buy, because they've learned what not to do in a different place. They'll come in and try and improve it, not necessarily from a HR point, but also because they just technically want to make lives or people's life better than what it used to be before. So there are a lot of elements from there, and that's why that mix of background experience plus how technology now functions help you maximize your or optimize your HR function. For instance, you have data people who can tell you, or who can build an algorithm for you to tell you whether or not the first batch of 100 graduates are actually the right fit for you. So then that tells me my recruiter does not have to go through 100 CVs because tech has already done that for you. And then when you look at a HR function in a startup, you won't necessarily need someone to look after payroll, benefits, rewards, and things like that, because you'll have other third-party products that can help you do that. You've got products that has been built particularly to help you function like a HRIS system, but on a mini scale. And that's something a startup usually can afford, and therefore, again, you don't need a single sole person to do that. And because of that, it maximizes your efficiency as a HR person in that team.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I'm kind of on board with that as well. I'm massively optimistic, and I think the beauty of some of these automated softwares is that what it's going to give us is for us to really utilize and leverage, our intellects on a higher level. I think that ultimately for me is what's so exciting about these technologies, and when it's kind of fully embraced in however long, I think that as a society it will give us, just so much more enjoyment in the workplace because you're eliminating those kind of that monotony and able to kind of really leverage your intellect more so than ever before. So I'm with you. I think it's I'm massively optimistic about it, and I think it can only be a positive thing, I think.
I think it also relieves us with more time to ourselves, so that we react more like a human being and have more of a people side when we actually, build strategies and make decisions. That's key for me, at least in a people team.
Agreed. Agreed. I think I couldn't agree with you more, Sophie. I think it's been a very easy podcast from that perspective, because I couldn't say that I disagreed with you on many points you've made. But thank you so much for taking time. It was really fantastic, and I enjoyed the chat very much. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.